Hare Krishna. We'll just briefly review what we discussed. Hare, welcome Prabhu. Welcome back.
Thank you.
When did you come to India?
Last week.
How Prabhu didn't come to India?
How Prabhu is shift moving his house.
Oh.
So they're all, everything is hard for that. Hopefully he'll join us next week.
Okay. We'll just briefly review what we discussed. Sorry, I'm late. Every time there's something like that.
Yeah, we have a special appearance.
Yeah, two special appearances. Two special guests today. So can you just review briefly what we discussed? So we are discussing the topic of sacrifices, right? So what is like, why, what's the main thing Krishna is telling about sacrifices? So what's the goal of sacrifices? Mainly sacrifices are meant. How is it related to this chapter?
Sacrifices mainly.
That's the definition of sacrifices, which you took home, right? Yeah. No, but how is it related to this chapter? We connected, right? What's the chapter name? So, sir, if we do sacrifices, what do we get? So we get transcendental knowledge by doing sacrifices. That's why Krishna is telling about different types of sacrifices. And because there are different people in different modes and different inclinations, there are also different sacrifices. Prabhupada later elaborates in the purport, like, there are sacrifices mentioned which can be performed with the mind and body and intelligence because of the nature of the person. So all this, and then ultimately Krishna Prabhupada also says, you know, the greatest sacrifice is the Krishna consciousness, right? Devotional service. So what else? Yeah, we discussed about all this list of sacrifices, right? So can somebody summarize or tell some important points which we took home, or we discussed quite a bit of verses? Yeah, the definition for sacrifice is very good. So what do brahmachari sacrifice? So nobody reviews the class. No, mainly he sacrifices the hearing process. So he hears only about Krishna. Then what about grihasthas? Because they sacrifice the sense, you know, propensity for sense gratification. Okay. Then again we talked about Ashtanga Yoga, this, you know, breathing, all the sacrificing the life air, controlling the life air. And then 28, sacrificing of possessions. So there are different types of sacrifices, right? Prabhupada talks about Dravya Yajna, Tapo Yajna, all those things.
Yoga Yajna.
Yeah. So all these sacrifices, Prabhupada elaborated on them. Right? So, okay. And then 29. Again, this is about Ashtanga Yoga or Pranayama. No, sacrificing the life air.
We'll do 29 onwards.
Hopefully we want to cover one particular verse today. Let's see if we have the time. Okay, we'll do 29 then. So continuing with the sacrifices. Apani chupati pranam prane apanam tatapare pranapana gati rudva pranayama parayana apare niyatamara pranan praneshu jupati. Yeah, we didn't read it at all. Still others who are inclined to the process of breath restraint to remain, who are inclined to the process of breath restraint to remain in trance, practice by offering the movement of the outgoing breath into the incoming and the incoming breath into the outgoing, and thus at last remain in trance, stopping all breathing. Others, curtailing the eating process, offer the outgoing breath into itself, onto itself as a sacrifice. It's a pranayama and raja yoga again. It's like, you know, incoming, outgoing. Prabhupada elaborates more about all these airs and all those things. I would not read that. We'll just read like some of the points from the purport. The first few lines. The system of yoga for controlling
the... The breathing process is called pranayama. And in the beginning, it is practiced in the hatha yoga system through different sitting postures.
Mm.
All of these processes are recommended for controlling the senses and for advancement in spiritual realization. This practice involves controlling the airs within the body so as to reverse the directions of their passage.
Okay, that's enough. So it's Prabhupada summarizing the whole, you know, the process of Hatha Yoga. It starts initially with pranayama, which is the sitting postures. But these days, you know, it's all completely cut off with the ultimate goal of pranayama. People just do pranayama as a, you know, something to keep the body fit, but actually it's a part of process which gives liberation. No, and mainly it also results in controlling the senses. So we'll miss the point usually, that one. People usually do it so they can stay fit to eat more. It's reverse. So
pranayama, we control the senses. I didn't understand.
Pranayama
is like with our mind, right?
It's our pranayama, the sitting. Sitting the postures, right? Yoga,
breathing.
Yeah, by controlling the breathing, we control the senses automatically, gradually. That's the whole this thing about pranayama. Because slowly, gradually, what they say, you have to restrict your eating. In order for this to be effective, they say, you know, you should not eat non-veg, you should not eat onion, you should not eat garlic, right?
Yeah, light food.
Eat only fruits. Okay. Continuing, then further on, Prabhupada is going to talk about this, you know, all this technicalities about this Hatha Yoga, you know, Rechaka, this breath, incoming breath, outgoing breath, combining those two. So further down, it talks about Krishna conscious person. A Krishna conscious person,
however, being always situated in transcendental loving service of the Lord, automatically becomes the controller of the senses.
Mm.
His senses, being always engaged in the service of Krishna, have no chance of becoming otherwise engaged. So at the end of life, he is naturally transferred to the transcendental plane of Lord Krishna. Consequently, he makes no attempt to increase his longevity.
Yeah, we can pause there. So essentially, in between, Prabhupada mentions, by doing this Hatha Yoga, one can increase their life longevity, basically. So then in the reply, Prabhupada first of all is saying that Krishna conscious person need not externally try to control his senses, because he is already using it in Krishna service, they are controlled. And at the same time, he doesn't need to increase his longevity also. If Krishna wants, his life can be increased. There is a verse which says, right, Rake Krishna, Krishna Mareke, Mare Krishna Rakeke. If Krishna wants to kill you, no one can protect you. If Krishna wants to protect you, no one can kill you. Right? So, you know, even if, because Krishna intervenes with our karma, even if according to karma you have to get cancer and you have to die or something, it may completely be reversed. So, devotee doesn't on its own endeavor for anything. If for the sake of service, devotee has to stay, then Krishna will arrange. If for the sake of service, devotee has to leave, Krishna will arrange. So, in this regard, maybe it's related. So, generally, you know, we get surprised when some very nice, wonderful devotees suddenly leave the world. like especially, you know, very empowered disciples who are spreading the preaching movement. Like, for example, this thing happened when Prabhupada's disciples, and we talked so many times about Tamal Krishna Maharaj, right? When he passed away. Anybody heard how he passed away? So he was going to Mayapur in car with the driver and maybe one or two disciples. And then the car hit an accident with a tree. It just slid from the road. Maybe it's in the, you know, early morning they travel usually, right? So in that, maybe in the dark or something, somehow it slid and it hit the tree. And he passed away like that. So everybody, you know, shocked. He's such an inspiration for everyone. So it's like, how can this happen? Like, you know, why, how is it, how did, you know, Krishna is supposed to protect his devotees, then why did it, he had to undergo such a death? And you know, that too such a shocking death. It's not even natural, okay, you get cancer and go and they expect that he passes away. So then Maharaj was telling the lecture, you know, I contemplated about, because he misses Maharaj so much, and he says, you know, I contemplated about this so much, and some devotee asked, you know, why is it happening? So then I could find only one answer. One answer is because he's such a surrendered servant of Srila Prabhupada, Prabhupada wanted him somewhere else for the service, urgently. So in the service here is done, wrapped up, now he's ready to take up another service. That's the only answer I could. Otherwise, for such a pure devotee, you know, death can never, it's not a, no, unfortunate incident. It's just a continuation of service. So that's why I was saying, you know, if Krishna wants to take us, it may happen like that also. No, then everybody else will be left
so
missing that person.
Words that you don't have to do this pranayama for, if you are engaged in Krishna consciousness,
yes,
you don't have to do all this.
Yes, correct.
That's what it says.
Yes, correct. Yeah, that's what Prabhupada is telling us, so we don't miss the point. Always everything is, that's what is going to happen, right? Krishna talks about so many yoga, Dhyana Yoga, Ashtanga Yoga, whole chapter dedicated to that. But all the time Prabhupada summarizes, you know, for us practical process is Krishna consciousness, this is what we need to do. He puts it in the context. Okay, so further down, this, because this verse also talks about curtailing the eating process, right? Last line in the translation. So now,
No.
In the translation, this, others curtailing the eating process offer the outgoing breath into itself as a sacrifice. So restricting the eating process is also a sacrifice. Now Srila Prabhupada says how a devotee does that. Further down, a Krishna conscious person
begins from the transcendental state and he is constantly in that consciousness. Therefore, there is no falling down and ultimately he enters into the abode of the Lord without delay. The practice of reduced eating is automatically done when one enters, when one eats only Krishna prasadam or food which is offered first to the Lord. Reducing the eating process is very helpful in a matter of sense control. And without sense control, there is no possibility of getting out of the material entanglement.
Mm. So actually, beginning step in self-realization is sense control. That's a very beginning, basic thing. Because without that, there is no, you know, we can't even think about anything spiritual. Because we'll always be pulled at this sense or that sense. Right? Always, that's what is happening. And for us, the practical thing is, just eat Krishna prasadam. It doesn't mean, you know, we don't eat palatable dishes or anything. We still satisfy the tongue, but, you know, by Krishna's mercy, we'll get purified by satisfying our tongue.
But how does it lead to reduced eating?
Yeah, see, so many ways it's reduced eating, right? Because otherwise, if it's not restricted to eat Krishna prasadam, we could eat anywhere outside, right? It's not about the amount.
Right.
It's about the, you know, somewhere there is some regulation. That's the point.
Right.
We are regulating it some way or the other. Like, you know, eating outside or eating in, you know, shops or, you know, if you go to a shop, there are so many things we could eat. Like, if say, anywhere you go, chocolate, so many things we could eat. Automatically we are restricting them, then it's not prasadam, we are not going to eat. But same thing, we can make so much at home and eat as prasadam. So it's not quantity wise, it's the, some regulation is there basically. We are controlling the mind saying not this, do this. Yeah, but as we advance, we will also come to know about the words in Nectar of Devotion, as I discussed earlier, right? About atyahara, overeating. The principle of overeating is not only eating more, it's also about over endeavoring, basically to accumulate material things. So both of them have to be controlled as we advance. Initially, Prabhupada said actually every disciple should eat prasadam till the throat, because you know that is completely going to purify them. But as we advance, we should learn how to honor prasadam, not gulp prasadam. You know, that's we are all struggling with that, but you know, as we advance, we should keep that as a goal. Actually, there is one reminds me of a very nice incident. So during early days, Prabhupada was used to supply abundant prasadam to everyone, right? So during Sunday feast, like he makes sure there's a lot of there is one big can of gulab jamuns at the entrance, like in Mangalati prasadam or something at the entrance, you know, so that whoever goes eats. So one devotee, I think, because initial stages, right, some with enthusiasm devotees become brahmacharis, but after some time, because they have this past desires, they pull and they want to, you know, go back. So one devotee was contemplating, you know, I want to, okay, enough, it's too much, okay, I tasted it, but still, you know, I want to enjoy outside. So he wanted to go. So while going, he saw that box of gulab jamun. He ate one gulab, oh, it's so nice. So then he said, oh, one is not enough, one more. He kept eating. He said, okay, I cannot go, I'll stay here. So then Prabhupada said, you know, this prasadam has conquered the devotee. Like, you know, this tasty prasadam has changed his mind completely. It's a very nice incident. Okay. Yeah. So we all have experiences about prasadam also, right? How prasadam would have, you know, helped us, and so many people can help it. Okay, we continue. Text number 30. Sarve api ete yajna vidho yajna kshapita kalmasha yajna shistamrita bhujo yanti brahma sanatanam. All these performers who know the meaning of sacrifice become cleansed of simple reactions, and having tasted the nectar of the results of sacrifices, they advance toward the supreme eternal atmosphere. So here now Krishna is giving, you know, what do they get by doing these sacrifices? First is transcendental knowledge we discussed earlier. But apart from that, they also get cleansed of sinful reactions. And because of this, they gradually advance during to their destination, whichever it may be, Brahman or Bhagavan. Okay. So we'll go three lines down the purport. It is found that the common aim.
It is found that the common aim of all is to control the senses. Sense gratification is the root cause of material existence. Therefore, unless and until one is situated on a platform apart from sense gratification, there is no chance of being elevated to the eternal platform of full knowledge, full bliss and full life.
This same point. So again, sense gratification or sense control is the first step. Right? That's what Prabhupada is discussing. Okay.
This platform is in the eternal atmosphere or Brahman atmosphere. All the above mentioned sacrifices help one to become cleansed of the sinful reactions of material existence. By this advancement in life, not only does one become happy and opulent in this life, but also at the end, he enters into the eternal kingdom of God, either merging into the impersonal Brahman or associating with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna.
So because of the sacrifices, one gets purified of sinful reactions. So the result of the purification is, Prabhupada is saying, one becomes happy and opulent in this life.
Why happy?
See, happy, right?
Happiness and sadness doesn't matter to you. You actually are using some sacrifices. So it's kind of a state of transcendental.
That's right.
But if you mention happy by that, it's not happy. It is not happy as we know it. It's not material happiness. It is transcendental bliss.
Yes.
That's what is happy.
And becomes
opulent
because opulence usually means... We are asking or answering? Okay, you are answering.
No, I'm asking.
Okay, that's fine. It's okay. Yeah.
opulence? Opulence is kind of, why does it become opulence? Like, so, when you're happy, I can understand the transcendent happiness. Opulence, I don't know.
Another special guest. So, okay, this happiness is, as you mentioned correctly, it's like, you know, transcendental happiness. So, it's not like which can be gained from material things. So, as we mentioned, right, there are six side effects, or rather, six benefits of bhakti, or rather, no, I'll say side effects, there is a nice word maybe, of bhakti, right? One is like, you know, shubhada, all auspiciousness, and then later on, you know, it's cleansing, and then there are 6 points, and then
byproducts,
yeah, and then you will reach closer to the, I wish I can know that, but yeah. So one of them is auspiciousness. Your life will become auspicious once you start doing bhakti. So auspicious means then, you know, you start becoming happy. No, this is spiritually happy. And then same thing, opulent also. So sometimes we may get even material opulence because we are worshipping Narayana. The Narayana is nicely worshipped, Lakshmi Devi will appear. So it may also, but doesn't mean one is seeking these things. That's a different thing. Doesn't mean through bhakti we are seeking happiness of, and material opulence.
You also mentioned earlier one thing, like if the devotee is advancing, Krishna will decorate him, or
those are qualities Krishna will decorate with.
Kind of opulence,
yes, correct. That's also there, yeah. So it can, he can be decorated with beautiful qualities. So that's also opulence, yeah. Or also in another context also, Krishna can give actually material opulences because he knows the devotee is going to use it rightfully in his service. As one day I was mentioning to Madhavi Mataji, like, you know, as we become more purer, we'll be more free. See, it's like a bull, it's tied to a pole, right? The more contaminated we are, the rope is shorter. So, you know, the room to move is very less. The more pure we are, the rope is longer. So, we have more room to move about and do things. Got it? Because we know, Krishna knows we are going to use it rightly. So he is going to provide us with lot of resources, money, followers, whatever it is, for furthering the service. But because when we are contaminated, we'll misuse and become more contaminated, we'll be restricted, and it's also based on karma. Automatically our karma will take charge of, you know, not giving us more than what is needed.
One more thing also you said, like, it's contradictory. Like, Krishna will take away sometimes.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, I heard that point. Like, all the...
Yeah, that's also there. Krishna says that whoever I give special mercy, I take away everything from him such that he doesn't have any recourse but to surrender to me.
Mm.
Right? But after that, he'll give everything. So that he'll use everything in his service. Yeah, whatever is needed, he will do. Yeah. So for somebody, he will take away. For somebody, at one point he will take away. After that, see Prabhupada, right? Till the point he surrendered, took sannyas, Krishna took away everything. He couldn't succeed in his business. Puri Lilamrita, Prabhupada said, you know, I was so successful businessman. I was almost confident that, you know, I'm going to get... And his plan of serving Krishna or his Guru Maharaj was, I'm going to earn a lot of money and give it to the movement. But he didn't want to personally take sannyas, even though that was his instruction of Guru Maharaj. He felt, you know, I'm a family man, I have wife and husband, wife and kids, you know, how am I going to do? But Krishna pushed him. Prabhupada said, you know, Krishna pushed me to follow the order of my Guru Maharaj. And without any knowledge, without unexpectedly, everything became flop, his business. He didn't have any, and he had to leave his wife also. Any recourse but to follow Guru Maharaj's instruction. And when Lilamrita, when he writes this, Prabhupada again and again refers to that verse. Yasyaham anugrahanani, that's the verse. I wish I can know that. But the verse where Krishna says, you know, for a person whom I want, I have special mercy, I shower special mercy, I take away everything from that person. Okay. And at the end, gradually, he comes to the kingdom of God.
Which chapter is it?
Which one? That's in Bhagavatam. Yeah, otherwise we could have read the index.
Who does he say this to, Madhuri?
Huh?
Who does he say this?
Oh, this one, I think I related the story also, right? Yeah. It's a discussion between Yudhishthir Maharaj, right?
The Raj,
yeah.
Okay.
Not Raj. It's a very nice incident. Once I
we want to drink the water.
No, that is the Yaksha.
Not. Okay. Yeah, Yudhishthir Maharaj. No, I know the story. Story was like Shiva. Somebody asked, like, you know, worshippers of Shiva. Shiva is a sannyasi. You know, it appears like a renunciate, right? He doesn't own anything. He is like a like ash person, like, you know, he just in a samshana. Like, he doesn't own smashana, he doesn't own anything. And his wife doesn't have a house. But the worshippers of Shiva are very rich. All of them are opulent and they are very much materially happy. And Vishnu owns everything. And worshippers of Vishnu become poorer and poorer. So, Yudhishthir Maharaj asked this question, I think, right, to Krishna. Why is it like that? Why is that your devotees become poorer, whereas the devotees of Shiva become richer? Whereas it should be reversed. Then Krishna says this verse. Whoever I have special mercy, I take away everything. I don't give the material opulences by which they get in time.
This is
a
sort of opposite of Arunya's
intention.
For those who worship me, I give them, like, I provide them what they
lack.
And then I carry them.
No, it's not opposite. It's consistent with that. Because Krishna gives whatever is needed for our service. Provide them what I lack means it's not that, you know, like I lack a sofa, I lack a TV. If Krishna, Krishna provide, he will provide what is needed for our service.
Wanted.
Want what's needed, yeah. Yeah, he will protect our service and protect our Krishna consciousness. Okay, continue. So this two lines verse 31. Nayam lokasti ayajnasya kuto anya kuru sattama. Oh, best of the Kuru dynasty, without sacrifice one can never live happily on this planet or in this life. What then of the next? So just to get be happy also, there is amount of sacrifice needed. That's what Krishna is telling. Even just to live bare happiness. But these days this concept is completely lost, right? People just go on enjoying, thinking that will make us happy. But actually, if you see, if you give up something, then you become happy. Give something. But we don't know, we don't have
if
this
you look
concept.
Look at the way when you go to work to get money, so you're sacrificing your time.
Yes.
You could have, in a way, you are sacrificing
yes.
your time. So I think that's what we have to like. You have to sacrifice.
Yeah, that's true.
You have to sacrifice.
You are sacrificing every moment, you're sacrificing something or something else. So not in the sacrifice of sense or sacrifice for Krishna in the sense, but you're kind of trading something or something else.
Mm-hmm.
In Singapore, in one of the words we read that line, right? I don't remember something, but it's like it's just reverse. This material world is. Just
yeah, day and night, right?
No, it's a reverse. Everything, whatever is true there, it's not true here.
We read one verse where it says
it's inverse, whatever is as compared to spiritual world. Maybe I will find
that. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. What I can relate to is like what is day and night, that's one thing.
Yeah, I think it's
okay. Okay, we'll read. Sorry.
Whatever form.
Oh no, just further down, like maybe 8 lines next page for me. The path of religion, almost like half.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The path of religion or the different kinds of sacrifice recommended above automatically solves our economic problems. By performance of yajna, we can have enough food, enough milk, etc. Even if there is a so-called increase of population. When the body is fully supplied, naturally the next stage is to satisfy the senses. The Vedas prescribe, therefore sacred marriage for regulated sense gratification. Therefore, one is gradually elevated to the platform of release from material bondage, and the highest perfection of liberated life is to associate it with the Supreme Lord. Perfection is achieved by performance of yajna as described above.
We can pause there. So, Prabhupada now summarizes the whole process, you know, how by performing yajna one can lead to perfection. So, first step is by performance of yajna, one automatic economics problems are solved. They don't need to automatically, because we discussed that earlier, right? In third chapter, cycle. By performance of yajna, demon gods are pleased and they supply with necessary necessities which are needed for day-to-day living, so we can live happily in this life and go to the aim for the spiritual life. So then when body is fully satisfied, next stage is to satisfy the senses. So that's why, you know, then we enter into this regulated marriage. Marriage where we have regulated sense gratification, so that thereby gradually go towards the spiritual life. Right? So the whole thing is mentioned here. Okay, further down, the highest kind of happiness, last three lines, but the highest kind of happiness.
But the highest kind of happiness that a man can achieve is to be promoted to the spiritual planets by practice of Krishna consciousness. A life of Krishna consciousness is therefore the solution to all the problems of material existence.
So in between, what Prabhupada was telling is like in different planets there is different amount of happiness, so people aim for that. And then he's saying, but the highest happiness is to be promoted to the spiritual planets. So therefore, just follow the life of Krishna consciousness. That's the solution to all the problems of material existence. So Prabhupada explained how by doing sacrifice one can live happily on this planet, and also, yeah, because Krishna says, you know, one cannot even live happily without doing sacrifice. So Prabhupada explained that. We'll continue. Evam bahuvidayajna vitadha brahmano ke karma jan vittitan sarvan evam jnatva vimokshase. All these different types of sacrifice are approved by the Vedas, and all of them are born of different types of work. Knowing them as such, you will become liberated. So what Krishna is saying, these sacrifices are approved by the Vedas. That means they are confirmed by the Lord. They are approved by the Lord. And they are born of different types of work, means they are born according to the guna and karma, guna, nature of the person. So based on person's nature of mode of goodness, ignorance and passion, or their inclinations of sense gratification, there are different sacrifices recommended. Like we discussed that, right? For persons who are inclined to eating meat, there is certain appropriate sacrifice is mentioned such that, you know, they can gradually come out of sense gratification for eating meat. Right, so all this are mentioned. It's all approved in the Vedas. This karma kanda majorly, but you know we'll come to that as late in the next verse. Where rather than karma kanda, we should do sacrifices with knowledge instead of for sense gratification. So we'll read this small purport.
Different types of sacrifice, as discussed above, are mentioned in the Vedas to suit the different types of worker. Because men are so deeply absorbed in the bodily concept, these sacrifices are so arranged that one can work either with the body, with the mind, or with the intellect. But all of them are recommended for ultimately bringing about liberation from the body. This is confirmed by the Lord here with from his own mouth.
Okay. So that's why different types of sacrifices, some with body, some with mind and intelligence, but ultimately they are meant to liberate us from the body. So far, if you summarize, what are all sacrifices can do? First is gives transcendental knowledge. Second one, frees us from sinful reactions, we discussed earlier. Third one is, here it is saying, it will get us liberated from this body, eventually. Okay, so go to the next verse. 33. Shreyan Dravya Mayadhya Jnaj Jnana Jnana Parantapa Sarvam Karma Khilam Partha Jnane Parisampayate Parisamapyate. O chastiser of the enemy, the sacrifice performed in knowledge is better than the mere sacrifice of material possessions. After all, O son of Pritha, all sacrifices of work culminate in transcendental knowledge. So here we see a distinction now. Krishna is saying the sacrifice performed in knowledge, that means which is actually Nishkama Karma Yoga, is better than mere sacrifice of material possessions. So mere sacrifice of material possessions refers to Karma Kanda, where there is some sacrifice of material possession, but that is done in order to gain more, right? For a license for more sense gratification. Like for example, the sacrifice of the meat is done so that, you know, they have a permission to eat meat. So these are all karmakanda realm of sacrifices. It's all material. The benefit is only material. But whereas sacrifices done with knowledge that, you know, I am the eternal servant of Krishna, those sacrifices will lead more and more to more higher transcendental knowledge. So Krishna is saying such sacrifice is better. After all, O son of Pritha, all sacrifices of work culminate in transcendental knowledge. So eventually, all the sacrifices anyway give transcendental knowledge. But you know, little by little, based on how much, you know, what is the intention. It's all about consciousness. So that's what, you know, Prabhupada is going to clarify here in this purport. Yeah, first few lines of purport.
The purpose of all sacrifices is to arrive at the status of complete knowledge, then to gain release from material miseries, and ultimately to engage in loving transcendental services, service to the Supreme Lord.
Yeah, we can pause there. So yeah, again Prabhupada is clarifying purpose of sacrifice. So first is to attain complete knowledge, second to gain release from material miseries, and then ultimately to engage in loving service of the Lord. Okay, we'll go further down. It's the last few lines of the purport. Without the elevation of knowledge,
without the elevation of the knowledge, sacrifices are simply material activities. When, however, they are elevated to the level of transcendental knowledge, all such activities enter into the spiritual platform. Depending on the differences in consciousness, sacrificial activities are sometimes called karma kanda, fruitive activities, and sometimes called jnana kanda, knowledge in the pursuit of truth. It is better when the end is knowledge.
Okay. So got this point. Without the knowledge, sacrifices have become material activities. See, for example, we discussed earlier in the purport, Prabhupada says, right, the Dravya Yagya, where the people and open hospitals and charitable orphanages and things like that, right? So if we do at that level without connection to Supreme, without transcendental knowledge, then it only gives material benefit. We'll get lot of pious credit so that next we can go to heavenly planets to reap that benefits. But whereas when we do it with spiritual knowledge, then we get spiritual benefits. Then Prabhupada is saying it's all about consciousness. Again, activities, it's all about consciousness. It doesn't mean we cannot, so devotees also distribute food for peace, but they distribute prasadam. Right, same, again, you know, you all often ask this question, doesn't mean, you know, we should not do any self social service and things like that, right? Yeah. So, depending on our motivation and inclination, we could still do it. Because definitely, as Krishna is approving it, saying that, you know, it's going to give transcendental knowledge. But again, depends on what you get back. You get only material back, material benefits. But same thing, if somehow we are trained properly and know how to use the propensity in Krishna service properly, then we may get actually spiritual benefit. So the greatest benefit we can do to somebody is to actually save their spiritual life. The Prabhupada gives example of this drowning man. So somebody is drowning, and somebody from outside says, you know, give me a shirt. Give me a shirt, I will save your shirt. They said, I am drowning, why are you saving my shirt? You know, you pull me. It's like that. So, you know, we help people on the bodily platform, like give them food and everything. Of course, for some people, without that, they can't even think about anything. So, you know, that's definitely there. But we should also understand where, in what is that, in proper perspective, where it fits in. What is the real service? Real service is to save them from the repetition of birth and death. So, if somehow we can apply this knowledge and we can be empowered to share this knowledge, that's the best service we can do the society. So that's what we are all getting trained.
It is better when the end is knowledge is the sacrifice.
When the end is knowledge. That means the goal is knowledge rather than material benefits. So in Karmakanda, the sacrifices are done for material benefits. But whereas the real sacrifices, or you know, the sacrifices transcendentally done, the goal is only to get jnana, or rather transcendental knowledge or bhakti. Like for example, we also sacrifice, right? We can say Janmashtami, we fast, right? That's a sacrifice. Or you know, the yagyas we are doing, chanting. But what is the goal? Goal is not that, you know, so I will become opulent. Or not that because, you know, my sinful reactions will get free and I'll get a... Right? We don't aim for all. We always, hopefully we'll only pray that Krishna, just give me more bhakti. Just keep me more engaged. Right? So that is, that proper said is better. That's what Krishna is saying, better. Right? So what are we asking for when we are doing activities in Krishna service? Or you know, when...
More service.
More service, yeah. Somebody asked Prabhupada, you know, Prabhupada, what is the goal of chanting? No, you're chanting. So, okay, after some years when you chant, what are you going to do? Prabhupada said it's more chanting. It's purer chanting. That's all. Right? We are hoping that while doing this chanting, we get purified. So, one day our chanting becomes more pure, very pure, that it attracts Krishna.
Now we are like mosquitoes just buzzing around.
Yeah.
Just making noise.
Yeah. Okay, now comes our highlight verse.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mention this verse for some other chapter, I remember this.
Yeah.
Because, yeah.
Let's see, we can. Text number 34. So what Krishna now, this section from 34 to 42, he is summarizing the topic of transcendental knowledge. And he begins with again explaining how to receive this knowledge. Because earlier, remember, he explained that I have given this knowledge to Sun God Vivashvan, and then through disciplic succession it's being received, but it's broken. Then again I'm giving this to you, Arjuna. So now again he's coming back to the concept of disciplic succession and you know how this knowledge has to be received.
So what is 31 to 33?
30 sacrifices. The one 31 to 33?
Earlier you said 25 to 30 is sacrifices.
No, 25 to 33 is various sacrifices.
33.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll read 34. Tadvidhi pranipatena pariprashnena sevaya upadyashanti devyanam jnaninastatvadarshina. Just try to learn the truth by approaching a spiritual master. Inquire from him submissively and render service unto him. The self-realized souls can impart knowledge unto you because they have seen the truth. Okay, now Krishna gives a clear indication as to how this knowledge has to be received. It has to be received, first, there are 3 points here, by approaching a spiritual master, which means actually to surrender to a spiritual master. That's what Prabhupada clarifies in the purport. Second is to inquire submissive, making submissive inquiries. Third, to render service. These are the 3 important aspects of approaching a spiritual master. One is we should approach a spiritual master in complete surrender and submissive inquiries and in service mode.
This is covered in second chapter, right?
Huh?
This is covered in second chapter, right? With the grass in his mouth, something like that.
We might have indicated this verse, but not, right?
No.
This verse as it is didn't come, right?
Something similar with submit to spiritual master.
Yeah.
Humbly, like with the grass in his mouth.
Blade of grass. But we didn't have a verse like that.
referred to this verse when reading one of the other verses. Yeah.
Mataji, why is it that Krishna is asking Arjuna? Krishna is asking Arjuna to become a spiritual master. It's like he already has one, right?
Yeah, but he is giving through, by speaking to Arjuna, he is giving general knowledge, or you know, general direction for every one of us. He is saying, you know, whenever you want to understand the truth, you have to approach a spiritual master. Yeah. He is, of course, we all know, right? For him, Arjuna is just an audience. We need somebody to talk to, right? But while talking to that person, we talk to everyone. It's like that. Yeah, so the key is the self-realized souls can impart knowledge unto you because they have seen the truth. Because they, self-realized souls, have seen the truth. Seen means, actually it also means either they have seen it directly, Krishna, or they have heard it from bona fide sources. So they have received it properly. And because they have received it so nicely, they can impart to you.
We touched this verse 2 years back, almost 2 years back. That's why everybody remembers this verse. So, I'm talking about how to inquire, that's when this came.
Thank you. So, self-realized souls, they can reveal this knowledge. So, first thing to clarify is, now this knowledge cannot be acquired on, like, it's not an ascending process. We know, right? Devotional service or bhakti or divya jnana is always descending. So somebody has to reveal. And that via media, because we cannot approach Krishna, right? We cannot act as if we are serving Krishna and, you know, Krishna. Of course, Krishna is within and giving directions. We cannot hear him properly. Or we can, we hear with guards. We hear only what we want to hear many times. So that's why Krishna appears externally as a spiritual master. So when that, when the physically a person is present and says do this or do don't do this, there is no room but to follow. No, you cannot beat around the bush. So that's why spiritual master is needed for everyone. And also, you know, he's a transparent via media, so through him service goes up. So we serve a spiritual master offers that service to his spiritual master, like that via goes to Krishna and the blessings come down. So Krishna, spiritual master, blessings and mercy comes down. Similarly, when we offer bhoga, we offer to our spiritual master who offers up like that and prasadam comes down. So we don't offer to Krishna directly, we offer to, so whoever has spiritual master, they say their spiritual master's prayer, otherwise we say Prabhupada Pranamantra, who is our shikshak. Okay. So let's see if we can go deep into this purport. So we read the first 4 lines. The path of
spiritual realization is undoubtedly difficult. The Lord therefore advises us to approach a bona fide spiritual master in the line of disciplic succession from the Lord himself. No one can be a bona fide spiritual master without following this principle of disciplic succession.
We can pause there. So the first thing first Prabhupada is saying is that spiritual path of spiritual realization is difficult. It's undoubtedly difficult. So it's not easy. Why it's not easy? Is it surprising anybody, this statement? No? So we all can feel it's difficult.
It's hard to find a bona fide spiritual master, right?
Okay,
so
that's one of the things, okay.
It's tough to detach ourselves.
Yeah, so that's it.
Yeah.
So that we can focus more on.
Yes, the difficulty is in our sense gratification.
Stopping our sense gratification.
Yeah, that's the difficulty. Prabhupada many times in the purport says, you know, classes, he said one class, he was, I think in, I don't know the place, I heard that. Prabhupada was saying, this process is so simple, just feasting, you know, singing, dancing in kirtan, doing nice service along with devotees, you know, harinam, and feasting, you know, so simple and so easy. What is the difficulty? That's the title of the class. What is the difficulty? That's all. Just let's say, no, there's a book also titled What's the Difficulty. We can actually meditate on the statement, right? We should, whenever we feel, oh, I can't do this, I don't do this, we should think, you know, what is the difficulty? So the way Prabhupada is saying is, you know, we can understand. It's so easy, why we are not able to do it? Because either we are lazy or we don't want to, or we are so caught up, so much tied up. So that's why spiritual master role is important, because he knows how to untie us. He can pull us out of a network of all that these things. And because of that connection now, and because of that love for spiritual master, we will be inclined to give up all these mundane things. It's like, you know, it becomes very easy. Otherwise, we don't have that motivation. We feel, you know, who am I responsible for? Okay, I am responsible for my spiritual life. So, I make a decision. I will succeed in, you know, maybe 10 generations. It's okay, I can take it slow. Right? It's okay. Anyway, so many lifetimes. Now, at least I have come this life, you know. I have come to temple almost so many times. So, it's good enough for me. Good job. Right? So, we can do that. We can, you know, take it easy on ourselves so much. But when we have somebody whom we want to please, right, we get the inspiration to give up all our laziness, all our inertia and all those things, just because that person will be pleased.
But how to motivate ourselves, like to take yourself to next level, it should be...
That's what I'm saying. If you have a connection with a person, if spiritual master especially, is our father in our spiritual lives, that will help us go further. Because always we think, how am I going to please him? Of course, we don't have love to start with. Initially, it starts with appreciation that, you know, spiritual master has picked me from this dungeon of material existence, and he has given me shelter at the lotus feet of Krishna, he has given me initiation, he has given me the holy name. So, minimally, I want to at least follow his instructions so that I can at least maintain my spiritual life. Then when we start with that appreciation, then slowly, little by little, hopefully, gradually some affection, and then eventually love will come with our spiritual master. So when we have that love, whenever we want to do something, we just want to do in such a way that it pleases that person. What is love? Love is, like, for example, we have experience with our kids and family. That's the closest thing, right? We just want to do anything and everything just because that person is pleased, right? Like, wife cooks so many things. Mataji shares so many times, you know, so whole day she finds this menu, that menu she makes before the kids comes. He doesn't even know. She makes nice burrito or so many things she makes and gives, so that just they, by eating, they'll be happy. Only gratification she wants is that they eat and then smile and, you know, be happy. Right?
But at our stage, we are not there, that love stage. So what is a baby step we should take to get motivated, more motivated? I understand that, yes, once you have love, you will do unconditionally. And every day you will think more. It's not like you will not think, but at our, this level...
I think it's very simple. That is chant and more chant.
No, main thing what I'm trying to... We can give so many general answers to your question, but I don't want to miss this point. So the point is, it's very important to have a connection with somebody superior who can help us, who can guide us. If we have, like, for example, let's say if we respect Harivilas Prabhu and we feel like, you know, he has helped me in my spiritual life. Somehow I come to temple and I'm being so happy, my whole family is happy in spiritual life. I'm grateful to him. So I want to do anything and everything just to please him. So then go to him and ask, Prabhu, can you tell me how I can please you? He says, Prabhu, let's do this festival. You be the in charge. Then, you know, you do work so hard just to do it, to please him. Then in doing that, you will give up sense gratification if you have to work so hard. Right? So it's very important to have somebody whom we love. Somehow or the other, we have appreciation, we love, and we want to give up something or the other for them. Then it becomes easy. On our own, it becomes tough. Because then, that's why I told it, we say, you know, a pat on the back is like, okay, today you got up 5:30, tomorrow you get up at 6 o'clock, it's okay. I was personally, I could share my personal this thing about it if it helps. Like, you know, we were trying to follow the instruction to improve our japa, right? At one point, then we thought, you know, we should try to go to Mangalarti. So many people, so somehow or the other, by mercy of spiritual master and blessing, somehow we were able to do it. Many people, many other people shared, you know, how we were able to do. We are also having same programs, everything, you know, we sleep late, somehow we cannot get up early. Everything, something or the other happens, how we are able to do. Then we said, okay, it's not our strength, it's coming from spiritual master. But other than that, I felt personally that when the alarm rings and when I had to get up, immediately I think, okay, if I do this thing, it's going to please my spiritual master, so let me get up. Then immediately I get up. It's not like, okay, let me sleep 5 more minutes and it'll be good, right? At least that time I used to think, now it's gone, but no. So that what, you know, that's what, it pushes out above the realm of ignorance.
I got it.
Yeah.
Yes.
So it's very important.
Eternal love, we are starting with our immediate, whoever we love.
Yes, it's whomever we can relate to. Like for example, before even we had spiritual master, all these things, I used to respect my Bhagavad Gita teacher so much. So he used to guide us. Whenever he comes, he used to guide us. So whenever day to day he's gone, I'm not in touch with him, but I remember his instruction so much. Whenever I do anything, I feel I want to do this because it pleases him. It need not be that the person is present and say, oh, I'm pleased with you. This spiritual realm, everything happens transcendentally. The pleasing and blessings also happens transcendentally. And the connection is there. So when he comes next time, he has a very deep connection with me. Because I also have, because I'm serving him without his presence.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So pleasing doesn't necessarily mean that he should know.
Yeah.
But generally our understanding is pleasing is at least he should know and then he is pleased.
Initial stages, we need that. Initial stages, we need that. Especially spiritual master. Because we want that approval. We don't know exactly what is their mood and, you know, what they likes and dislikes, so we want that direct reciprocation. But when we advance, we don't need that. We know exactly it pleases them and we can get through some of the subtle ways, we can get the message. Automatically we'll become happy, they are pleased. Yeah.
I was just thinking of my son. He was last week they were giving out pizza on Sunday, right? So apparently Harilastro wanted somebody to as long as possible to say Hare Krishna. So my son said that and he got a big slice of pizza. So he was very happy. He came back and he was trying to show at the same time not show. Show in the sense that I got it, but not show because he doesn't want to share. So I said, you go back and thank. I was about to say, you go back and thank him. He said, Daddy, you wait, I'll go thank him and come. So he went and thanked. So I was like, okay, at least this fellow is on the right path. If not, I am not the
Yeah. Yeah.
Prasad, that's wonderful thing.
Yeah. Okay. So in the same few lines, Prabhupada is talking about the principle of disciplic succession. So such a bona fide spiritual master, literally he should be in the disciplic succession. That means in an unconnected, unbroken line of parampara, starting with Krishna. So that there are four bona fide paramparas. With Brahma, Rudra Sampradaya, Brahma Sampradaya and Kumara and Sri Sampradaya, Lakshmi. These are four bona fide Vaishnava Sampradayas. So anybody can be in any of this bona fide Sampradaya, then he can be a bona fide spiritual master. So how does this work? It's like the electricity wire, right? So the light is glowing here, but it's connected through the electric house. It's connected through the line which is not broken. That's why the same power is coming here. So like that, the same message of Krishna is going to come through in the disciplic line if it's unbroken. So we need not have doubt that, you know, Krishna's personally spoke to Arjuna. Okay, here some person is standing and speaking to me. You know, is it really same? No, it's the same message. And especially what is the more beneficial thing is that person knows our nature. And he applies it based on time, place and circumstances in a way that we can progress. So that's the even more greater benefit. Otherwise Krishna would give general instructions, we don't know how to apply them.
We can customize.
Yeah. And we can take things which we want and don't want. Give up. Okay, then further down Prabhupada explains how, because you know this religion is given by Krishna or God, we cannot speculate to understand it. So that's why we need the spiritual master who can reveal the knowledge. So we'll go further, which says, Prabhupada says, one has to approach a bona fide spiritual master.
To receive the knowledge, such a spiritual master should be accepted in full surrender, and one should serve the spiritual master like a menial servant without false prestige. Satisfaction of the self-realized spiritual master is the secret of advancement in spiritual life. Inquiries and submission constitute the proper combination for spiritual understanding.
We can pause there, Prabhu. So again, Prabhupada is elaborating on this. So nice. So one has to approach a bona fide spiritual master. and how to approach. Accept it in full surrender, right? Same thing we discussed. And one should serve the spiritual master like a menial servant without false prestige. So, you know, full surrender. So initially when we start with, we may, actually it may seem like, you know, spiritual master is also a person actually we don't even know, we haven't even seen. Sometimes it's a, like unknown person, kind of like unknown person, how much we can, we don't even have a proper, you know, intimate conversation with that person. But, you know, how can we accept with full surrender? You know, it's too much, right? So the way it works is that, so when we are ready to accept a spiritual master, or when we are seeking and when we are eager, when we know this is what I need and I'm ready, you know, I want to take this next step. This is very important in our spiritual journey, to accept a spiritual master. It's one of the main things actually, Guru Ashraya. Without spiritual master, we cannot go back home, back to God. Essentially, we need a sponsor. No, visa, we have sponsors, right? So, spiritual master is our sponsor to the spiritual world. He says, okay, now I'm going to sanction this person to the spiritual world. So, what happens is, when we are ready, when we are eager, when we are hankering and when we are crying, Krishna, give me the guide who can help me back home, back to God. Then Krishna shows us a spiritual master and he also gives us a faith to follow that spiritual master.
Very nice.
Yeah.
I was thinking of an analogy, right? So I heard it in Vishakha Hari's concert.
Mm.
So Guru is the hands of the Lord,
yeah,
by which he,
yeah,
takes the flowers of the soul and puts it into,
mm,
the Lord's lotus.
Correct.
Feet, you see. So,
yeah.
So you're giving exactly the same thing.
Right? Mm-hmm. Right? Full surrender. Then Prabhupada further says, you know, does that mean we should not question spiritual master? Does that mean we should not? That will come further down. And the next one is, one should serve the spiritual master like a menial servant without false prestige. Now, if somehow we got we get the fortune of being, you know, menial servant of spiritual master, that's the, you know, perfection of our life. Initially, we come with so much false ego. Actually, we may feel like, what is there in, what is there in washing clothes of spiritual master? But if we understand the essence of spiritual life, that is the perfection of our life. If we can be such a menial servant, people stand in queue to wash clothes of spiritual master, or, you know, to take out his shoes. No, that's because that's the perfection of our life, to be a menial servant of a spiritual master. Because the satisfaction of the self-realized spiritual master is the secret of advancement in spiritual life. So the way to advance is just by pleasing the spiritual master. And somehow or the other, if the spiritual have a spiritual master and if the spiritual master is pleased with us, that's all. Our spiritual life is set. And we can know for sure if somebody is making good progress in spiritual life, we can say for sure the spiritual master is pleased. Otherwise, this is a verse, right, in Mangalarti. Yasya prasadat bhagavat prasado, yasya prasadan, yasya aprasadan, nagati kutobi. Means like, if when he is pleased, Krishna is pleased. When he is displeased, there is no hope for me. I am hopeless. Because there is nowhere to go. We mentioned once, right, like, we think spiritual life is the only hope and we leave the material life, you know, all the things, and we come here and take shelter. And here if we find faults and make mistakes, there is no hope. So similarly, you know, spiritual master is our only guide who is, you know, helping us back home, back to Godhead. And if we displease him, we offend him, where is our hope? So we'll be hopeless. Gone case. I was mentioning one incident. So one of Prabhupada's disciples made a terrible mistake, great offense. I will tell what that offense is. Then Prabhupada became very angry. He wanted to chastise him in order to show an example, set an example, so other people don't do this mistake. Then Prabhupada said, you know, he called him and he said, okay, I'm going to withdraw my mercy from you. That's all. Finished. That person started sobbing, crying, literally so much. Prabhupada begging, no, please don't do this to me. Because he understands, if spiritual master, it's like, you know, it's gone, spiritual life is finished. Then Then Prabhupada said, okay, but he is very merciful. He said, okay, that's fine. Okay, don't do this again. And the mistake he made is he said, Prabhupada is equal to Krishna. He said, Prabhupada is equal to God. So he said, you know, Vishnu, this is Mayavadi. I don't want to encourage that. You see, he is compassionate to his disciples, but at the same time, if he has to give compassion to him, all the others are going to follow, and he is not compassionate to all others, right? If he excuses him. So once we know that the importance of spiritual master and pleasing him, we should be very careful, you know, not to commit offenses and be diligent in serving the spiritual master, so he doesn't get displeased. But actually, in my service to our spiritual master, there was one time where, I made a mistake where, I was so much false ego, everything, that spiritual master could spot that. Then he chastised me. And of course, he knows I'm a little bit or actingly soft-hearted or sentimental maybe, that easily cry. So he didn't want to directly chastise me because he knows I may take it very seriously and keep crying for a long time without doing anything. So he chastised me through the servants whom I'm helping serve, his disciples, but who are mentoring me kind of. So they called me once and nicely, made me sit, and I was thinking something is coming. And then gradually they brought up this topic and he said, okay, seems like. Then they didn't tell me directly, what exactly Maharaj said or what was the conversation, or even the way they said that he is displeased also, I didn't get it clearly. Or rather, it was not like that, but that's a message I got, that I somehow displeased him. Then I was crying so much, upset. Then that was very good because it was a reset point for me. Because somehow in service to spiritual master, I forgot the whole principles of, what is this importance, how I should regard, all those things I forgot because of false ego. But now it's a reset point. It's like, okay, pleasing spiritual master is my life and soul. What am I doing with my life? And then the one thing which I wanted to share was that what made me happy is actually that my spiritual master chastised me. Because unless you feel that person is yours, you don't chastise them. So I felt, okay, of course he accepted me as a servant in the first place, which I, to start with, right? But then we don't have that connection. We feel, okay, some initiation is something, I don't have that connection. But then when this incident happened, I felt, okay, he took the time to chastise me. Right, that's also such a wonderful thing, right? He, after so many things he could be doing, preaching so many things, he has the time to write a letter or talk to his disciples to chastise this person. So that's mercy. So inquiries and submission constitute the proper combination for spiritual understanding. So submissive inquiries, Prabhupada is telling, then we'll continue further and Prabhupada explains more. Unless there is submission
and service, inquiries from the learned spiritual master will not be effective. One must be able to pass the test of the spiritual master, and when he sees the genuine desire of the disciple, he automatically blesses the disciple with genuine spiritual understanding. In this verse, both blind following and absurd inquiries are condemned.
Okay, we can pause there. So this is what it is. So the way we inquire from spiritual master is genuine desires, genuine inquiries for spiritual life, not like, okay, what is a formula to make more money? So one person came to Srila Prabhupada, was visiting one place. So one materialistic person, he was always rushing, pushing people away and going to Prabhupada and asking, Prabhupada, please bless me, Prabhupada, please bless me. Prabhupada understood his motive, why he is asking. But he ignored him so many times. But somehow then he insisted in so much, pestered Prabhupada. Then Prabhupada said, he looked at him very seriously and said, okay, I'm going to bless you. From today onwards, your material life is finished. Then he said, Prabhupada, I don't want this blessing. Please, I don't want this blessing. So he came to ask some, material benefits from spiritual master, from sadhu, and Prabhupada said, he said, this is the only blessing I can give. Prabhupada said, this is the only blessing I can give. So, we should not ask spiritual master all junk questions, like, what is this, this war is happening there, what is it, something, ask genuine things about, you know, I am struggling with lust, anger and greed, how can I get freed from this, or you know, I am not able to chant attentively, what can I do, like, you know, so many things we have to work on and you are worrying about some war happening somewhere. So that's why, and then at the same time, blind following is also not recommended. So it is said that, or you know, in ISKCON the policy is that once we chose spiritual master, or actually then spiritual master also chooses, you know, he observes the disciple, and disciple also gets to observe the spiritual master for at least minimally 1 year. So they both interact, you know, disciple hears lectures or whatever the spiritual master is preaching, so he absorbs in the mood, you know, what is the mood of person, and or talks to the disciples or something, whatever is needed. And spiritual master also watches whether this person is chanting 16 rounds or following the predicted principles. Of course, he doesn't literally watch, you know, he has assistants who can help tell. So that 1 year period, within that 1 year, you can ask any questions about clarification kind of questions. Something. Okay, you are preaching, what is the mood of preaching, or you know, how do you think this helps Prabhupada's movement, or any such questions. But once we chose a spiritual master and everything is done, this part is done, we should not ask such, you know, so it's not blind following. After that period is gone, it's no more challenging questions. It's all, okay, just submissively following what the spiritual master says. Once a decision is made, then when the instruction comes, we cannot say, you know, how is this beneficial for me? Because all these things should have been cleared out before itself. There should not be any doubts. No. We should be ready that, okay, now whatever my spiritual master says, I'm ready to follow. If he wants to give up my family, he will not. That's the spiritual master doesn't give any instructions which the disciple cannot follow. Right? But we should have faith, that so much surrender or faith that, you know, whatever he says, I'm going to do. And even if I don't have the capacity, the principle is the spiritual master gives the strength to follow the instruction along with the instruction. Along with receiving an instruction, we get the strength to follow that instruction. So with that faith, we try to follow that instruction. Okay, next, continue. Not only
should one hear submissively from the spiritual master, but one must also get a clear understanding from him in submission and service in inquiries. A bona fide spiritual master is by nature very kind towards the disciple.
Hmm.
Therefore, when the student is submissive and is always ready to render service, the reciprocation of knowledge and inquiries becomes perfect.
Yeah. So, this, as we know, right, we need for conception, we need a potent husband and a potent wife. So similarly, for spiritual life to succeed, there should be a bona fide spiritual master and a bona fide disciple. In most cases, spiritual master is bona fide. The trouble lies in the disciple being bona fide, in trying to follow the spiritual master's instructions or following the regulative principles and all those things. So it's all our journey, our work, hard work. Because it is the mercy and blessings and everything is there from their side. But somehow we should be submissive and always ready to render service and please the spiritual master so that we can make strides in devotional life. Yeah, once we have spiritual master and somehow once he is pleased, actually we can see we can make amazing progress in spiritual life. Otherwise, initially, because you know, he helps us remove that entanglements easily, lifts us up. Otherwise, we are struggling so much with everything, with our passion, ignorance, all those things. But you know, somehow that mercy comes, mercy of Krishna comes in the form of Guru.
Actually, every class we begin with Ajnanati.
Yeah. Okay, therefore, when the student is submissive and is always ready to render service, the reciprocation of knowledge and inquiries becomes perfect. So when we inquire with the service attitude and with the submissive spirit, when we inquire, when the knowledge comes, you're ready to receive. Because always it comes down, right? When we pour a water, it comes down. So like that, when we are in that submissive mood, ready to receive, when the knowledge comes, we can accept it. Otherwise, we channel a challenging spirit. We talk, debate, you know, let's discuss about Bhagavad Gita verses with the spiritual master, like in a friendly talks, like Arjuna, right? He talked with Krishna in friendly subject matter, then Krishna didn't say anything. But when he accepted Krishna as spiritual master, then Krishna started giving knowledge. So, the same thing. So, hopefully at some point, we hope, we pray that all of us will accept a spiritual master and continue our journey. Hare Krishna.
Give you a blessing.
Yeah, we are praying. So.